Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fin side.
Good morning, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode of On the Fin Side here with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all of our social media outlets, and we are the official partner as well for the Fan Sided Network as well as finfanatic.com. We are on the eve here of the free agency tampering period, which is essentially in the NFL today, the first day of free agency. And we're starting to hear news come in, and the Dolphins actually have acquired two players already, even before free agency began. And, you know, I think these were a little bit of a surprise here, Paul. I mean, first, we were talking in previous episodes here about the unrestricted free agents the Dolphins have to re-sign, Matt Hawk being one of them. That definitely looks like it's not going to happen now. The Dolphins signed Michael Pilardi to be their punter this year, it appears. Michael Pilardi is somebody who was out of the league last year because of a torn ACL. He appears to be healthy. That's why the Dolphins signed him. And they traded for Isaiah Wilson, which we'll get to in a second. But, you know, we don't spend a lot of time on the show, Paul, talking about punters, but Michael Pilardi in, Matt Hawk out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you say we don't spend a lot of time, but it feels like a lot of weeks we're talking about Hawk as either the MVP or, you know, being in the bottom of the roster, almost ruin the game conversation. And, you know, I go back to the Jeff Ireland thing on HBO's Hard Knocks a few years ago, where he's like, you know, you're up here and you're down here and we really need you right here. And we didn't really get that with Hawk. We got stretches of it, but then he would have a colossally bad game. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about how we expected the Dolphins to either re-sign Hawk or possibly go the draft route, and they threw a curveball, but it's because a pretty good punter was available. It's a one-year deal, and let's see what we get out of it. But if Miami's able to do some of the things it looks like they can this offseason, we're going to need somebody who, at the very least, is consistent from the punter position. And that doesn't sound like Hawk, and Hawk probably would have been a $4.5 million punter at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fascinating to see what Hawk gets. I mean, even if he doesn't quite get $4.5 million, he's going to get more than Pilardi is going to get from the Dolphins. And you look at their careers, and Matt Hawk has been punting since 2017 when he beat out Barr for that punting job in Adam Gase's second year. Pilardi, for his career, 45.3 gross average compared to Matt Hawk, who's at 44.7. Net punting, you've got Michael Pilardi at 40.3, Matt Hawk at 40.1. So based on just statistics, looks like the Dolphins have upgraded slightly. But, you know, Matt Hawk, I thought, it was by far his best season last year. Those, you know, up and downs, I thought were a lot more up last year. But in the last two games, started to see a little bit of the old Matt Hawk. So, you know, I think it's safe to say we wish him the best right now. And he's going to be one of a couple of Dolphins free agents that are going to presumably hit the wire here. So, secondly, a little bit of a surprise. The Dolphins trade this year's seventh round pick to the Titans for next year's seventh round pick. And Isaiah Wilson, who just 10 and a half months ago here, Paul, was the 29th overall pick in the NFL draft, and he has a laundry list of problems. But what was your first takeaway from this?
Honestly, I like it. It's the guy's got a little bit of mess going on, but at the end of the day, he's a first-round talent that if you can get him to grow up a little bit, you've got a chance at adding a fourth first rounder from last year that could be really effective along the offensive line. At worst, he can be a key depth piece, and it's a low risk, high reward type of trade. for a seventh rounder. And who knows? If he and Kinley are close, this is the thing I keep going back to. The two of them played together at Georgia. And if they are close, Kinley may be able to help get Wilson in line in a way that his teammates in Tennessee weren't able to do.
Yeah, there are a couple of connections. You've got Kinley from Georgia, and you've also got, you know, this is a former five-star recruit from Brooklyn, which, you know, that's where Brian Flores is from. They actually went to the same high school. Who knows what type of a connection that actually is? But there's got to be something with Flores where he's saying, you know, we might be able to reach this kid. But you want to talk about problems. I mean, just going back through since he was drafted. I mean, first he came in, he had immaturity issues coming in to the season. That's part of the reason why a lot of people thought he'd be a second or third rounder. Ended up going first round to replace Jack Conklin there in Tennessee. But after he was drafted, he loses the starting right tackle job to Dennis Kelly, which was not expected. He played three snaps overall as a rookie. He went on the COVID list in July, September, and December. August 15th, before the season starts, he attends a party at Tennessee State. Cops get called, presumably because there's drugs and a lot of other things going on there. Isaiah Wilson ends up jumping off a second floor balcony to the ground. Doesn't get hurt, but could have very easily, obviously. Fleeing the scene. Just all not good stuff here. September, he gets a DWI. And really after the year, Titans general manager John Robinson, typically, you know, a general manager after drafting is going to give some politically correct answer about, hey, you know, we believe in him. He's going to get an opportunity, he has talent, blah, blah, blah. No. He certainly didn't say that. He said, for whatever reason, the player this fall that was here at Nashville wasn't the guy we spent time with this past last year. And then Wilson tweets out 5 days after that he's not going to play for the Titans. And then he deleted that probably because his agent said, if you do that, that's called quitting and they can basically take all your money away. So then he deleted that and took it back. So we could have a whole show on his off the field problems.
I have to say though, my favorite there is, God, that sounds like a rookie GM comment. That guy's really not the same guy we talked to throughout the draft process. No. No, these guys are coached up to talk and pretend they're somebody they're not? Come on. Surely you jest. I mean, come on. There have been so many reports about the fact that these GMs ask these guys these stupid curveball questions just to try to get a sense of who the real guy is, because these guys, essentially, as soon as the season ends, are being coached up by agents and, you know, they go to these little campouts held by ex-NFL players with everything that general managers and coaches want to hear from you to get you drafted higher. So, yeah, he's not the same guy. No kidding. Like, that's the stupidest comment ever. You can say that about almost any player on any NFL roster, period. You know, so anyway, Kat, real quick, question already from the chat is, what's our opinion on Zaven Collins? I'll let you go first.
Zaven Collins, yeah, I mean, this is somebody in this defense who could possibly be a monster. I go back and forth about it. Can this be like a Brian Urlacher type in this defense, or is this somebody who might struggle? And I know that's a vague answer, but, you know, he's 6'4", 260, and he can move for that size. I didn't see him as being as physical at Tulsa that I saw like the Brian Urlachers and the late Leighton Vander Esches at that size B. But I think that can kind of be taught too. My question is, in the passing game, is his length going to be an asset in getting into passing lanes, or is he going to struggle to kind of turn and run with receivers when he needs to be? So I go back and forth on him. 18 still a little bit too high for me, but 36 I would certainly consider him.
Yeah, for me, given the fact that Pitts has slid firmly into my number one spot target-wise, now I'm looking at that second tier of linebackers, and that includes Owusu-Kamara, that includes Zaven Collins, that includes Chaz Surratt. If Miami were to come away with Zaven Collins, I think he'd be a very good player in Flores' defense. And one of the reasons why I'm even firmer in that camp now, where I'm looking at the second tier of linebackers, I would not be unhappy if they draft Micah Parsons. I'm going to say that right now. But one of the things that I've heard recently, too, is I talked to a friend that knows some people inside the Penn State program, and they have said to him offline that basically Micah Parsons is the most immature player that they've ever seen come through their program while they've been
there. Wow.
So that worries me. I mean, it may be something where he had some really bad immaturity issues, you know, his first year with the program, maybe into his second, and he's grown up since then. I don't know, but you need to do a lot of homework. And the fact that I just love everything that Pitts does to this offense, going through some of the exercises I've been going through, getting ready for free agency in the draft. Miami is the better team overall at both tight end and wide receiver and on offense in general if they draft Kyle Pitts than anybody else in this draft. And that's where I have to look at it and go, okay, Kyle Pitts is such a difference-making receiver. I can slide away from Parsons and look at Zaven Collins, look at Chaz Surratt, look at Owusu Kamara, look at some of these guys in the later rounds, you know, Browning, et cetera, that can come in and either serve a role or be a starter.
Got it. So given that, Paul, and hey, I know you've been Micah Parsons no matter what, and it takes a lot for you to say, hey, I'm moving off that a lot. So kudos to you on that. Now looking at kind of how the board stacks for you, is he a player that you're not only putting below Pitts, but you're also putting below, you know, the Jamar Chases, the Devontae Smiths, them, given the linebacker depth in this draft?
He's still 1B for me. I mean, he is one I definitively take at 18 if he slides. I would even consider moving up a little bit to grab him at this point, just because the talent is there if you think you can get through to him. But for me, I still don't love the idea of going wide receiver in the top 10. I like Waddle. I like Chase. I like Devontae Smith. I really, truly do. They get a little bit of that benefit of that helmet on the and logo that they're wearing, because I see a lot of wide receivers. I see that as the deepest position in this draft. And yeah, you know, I see difference-making guys in the third round that can come in and start for you right away. And for me, like that's part of why I look at Pitts, because if you take Pitts and you sign a wide receiver in free agency, guess what? You really only need one wide receiver in the draft that can come in and be effective for you, and even then it's a little bit of a luxury depending on which wide receiver you sign in free agency.
I look at two players that I would turn down trade offers to move down for, and it would make sense, and that's Penei Sewell and that's Kyle Pitts. And the reason for it is because I feel that the team could look at them and say, look, if we don't draft them, these players athletically, performance-wise, the whole package, they don't come along very often. I can't see how you can look at Jamar Chase or Devontae Smith and think, gosh, this is a once-in-a-decade type of talent here. I can't see that. So given that, and given what you said at receiver, there's a lot of depth at receiver. And I'll even go a step further. If you're talking about some of these teams that are drafting 19th and 20th, for example, the Bears and Washington, I don't expect the Dolphins to make a huge trade down like that. But if I had to choose between Jamar Chase and Rashad Bateman, a second rounder and two first rounders, if that were the haul, that's an easy choice for me. I'm making that trade.
Yeah, every time. That's huge for me too. Like if the pick is wide receiver, I'd rather trade down almost no matter what. You know, you tell me I'm adding a second and I get to move back three spots, let's do it. You tell me I'm adding a second next year and I get to move down three spots and I can still grab a Rashad Bateman or a Kadarius Toney or a Jalen Darden or a Tutu Atwell or Nico Collins. Like, there are so many wide receivers. My thing too in this, and I hate to keep getting back on the Pitts chain, that's train, this is not what we're on about today, but again, it's I know it's relevant. It's if you take Pitts and you've got Pitts and Gesicki out there, all of your wide receivers are going to be better because those corners are going to be on an island now because they're not going to have that safety help over the top. And if they do get that safety help over the top, God help the opposing defense, because Gesicki and Pitts are going to eat over the middle and down the seam. They're going to force teams to dedicate safety help to whoever is covering them, because they're not going to put, you know, they're not going to take their corners off the wide receivers in those scenarios. And if they do, God help them. It's they just start to be able to dictate what opposing defenses do reliably, and they're able to move those guys all over the place so they can dictate matchups. And for me, that's worth its weight in gold.
See, yeah, that's the thing, is dictating matchups. And I think Penei Sewell and Kyle Pitts, one of those two, they allow you to take a position and be dominant at it. Like, my biggest frustration at the end of this offseason is going to be looking at our skill positions, because this is the offseason to surround Tua and put him in the best possible scenario to have that supporting cast. If I look at the running back spot, and we didn't get Aaron Jones, we didn't get Najee Harris, didn't get Javonte Williams or Travis Etienne, and a wide receiver, it's not a dominant unit. And the offensive line, well, if Austin Jackson and Robert Hunt do well, then it could be a B-plus unit. But I look at the rest at the supporting cast and say, these positions are C's and C-pluses. How are we expecting Tua to really take that next step up? So that's where the Dolphins have a lot of responsibility here, too. I want them to get quality over quantity here this offseason. Last offseason, I felt like they cast a wide net. They got a lot of players. They did a great job. They won 10 games. But they've built that foundation. Now it's time to build on top of that foundation with star players.
It is, and I'm kind of between the two on this one. It's, yes, I want them to add quality over quantity, but I don't want to sacrifice the ability to upgrade multiple positions to be able to upgrade one. And that's where I look at it and go, okay, you know, can we make, and I hate to bring this up, but I know it's going in the chat, you know, can we have Deshaun Watson and basically the skill players we had last year for the most part? Or can we have Tua with Pitts now? You know, let's say T.Y. Yeah. Hilton, Rashad Bateman, and the best of the cast from last year. And, oh, yeah, add Javonte Williams or Najee Harris to that list, or Travis Etienne. You know, because it's everybody wants these guys around him, but you have to take them away. And guess what? Even if you're in the Aaron Jones camp, you probably have to take that away if you go get Deshaun Watson. You're not going to have the cap space to be able to add any type of superstar around him in that scenario.
You're right on that. And I have no issues on bringing up Deshaun Watson. I mean, people who are thinks it's such a blemish to Tua, just, I mean, quite frankly, don't get it.
No,
it's look, I'm not saying, okay, oh, Deshaun Watson, okay, we didn't get him in a trade. Okay, who's the next quarterback out there? No, it is Deshaun Watson or it's nobody. I feel, and I think you're exactly right, Paul, in what you said. You have two ways to really build a great football team. And if it's Deshaun Watson and you pull off a trade there and you don't have quite the supporting cast, Watson has demonstrated he can lead the league in passing yards without a great supporting cast, without a good supporting cast. On the other side, you know, this is what I posted here on Twitter, is you could have this scenario where if you go skill position crazy in free agency in the draft, you may have Najee Harris at running back, Devontae Parker, Curtis Samuel, and Elijah Moore at receiver, Mike Gesicki at tight end. You look at that supporting cast and think, yes, this is how you build around Tua. You give him the weapons. And the Dolphins have the opportunity to take either the offensive line or the skill positions and make them, turn them from a C to an A.
Right. And you can't do that very well if you make that trade. And that's where I just look at it and go, I'd rather build the team. Because not only that, and this is something I know a lot of folks haven't talked about with this, Deshaun Watson did prove that he can do very well without the supporting cast in Houston. Deshaun Watson also proved that when he doesn't have the supporting cast, he's going to get frustrated and try to get out. And, you know, I worry about that. I mean, Flores can win with a CFL roster, don't get me wrong. But I don't want to deal with a guy that's antsy for the skill positions, but he's eating up the whole cap. And, you know, you've got to now sacrifice some other stars to be able to appease your new superstar that has shown that he gets disgruntled.
I disagree on that portion of it. I think maybe trading DeAndre Hopkins for what you did factors into it very, very little. I think Deshaun Watson feels he's been disrespected. And look, a player should, I'm a huge believer that a player should not have leniency over saying who's the GM and who's not. Okay. But when you tell him he's going to have input and then you sign and then you do that, and then when he's out of town, you hire the GM and then you hire a head coach who is the passing game coordinator for the team with the least amount of passing yards in the league. I understand him saying, screw this place. I don't think Deshaun Watson is somebody we're going to get 2 years down the road. He's like, yeah, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't think that's going to happen in Miami. Houston is on another level of completely screwing everything.
Yeah, no, and I'm with you, but let's go ahead and move on to free agency. But
before we do, guys,
make sure you guys like, make sure you guys subscribe. If you can, please feel free to go out and leave us a review out on iTunes. It does help us out here. And really thank you guys so much for listening, and make sure you share this out with your friends because we're about to kick it into high gear with everything coming up, guys.
We certainly are. And Paul, we talked about the franchise tag players here last week, and at the time I think there was only one that was tagged. So going down the list, there were 10 players that were franchised. Dak Prescott, who officially has the tag, but he's got the contract. Allen Robinson, wide receiver. Chris Godwin, wide receiver. Offensive tackles, Taylor Moten and Cam Robinson. Guard Brandon Scherff, defensive tackle Leonard Williams, and safeties Justin Simmons, Marcus Williams, and Marcus May. So all of them we can count on being out there, are being off the free agent market. Also, the Bucks re-signed Levante David. The Bills re-signed both offensive tackle Darrell Williams and the linebacker Matt Milano. So of the top 25 consensus free agents that I for that board where I combined 8 different top free agency boards from Pro Football Talk and a lot of other places, 11 of the top 25 guys are off the market here. So one surprise though, Paul, that's gotten a lot of attention who wasn't tagged is Kenny Golladay. And we just assumed that he would get that franchise tag. The Lions right now are starting Tyrell Williams and Quintus Cephas at wide receiver. Why they wouldn't tag him and at least try to tag and trade him is beyond me. So I'll say first that when I first heard Kenny Golladay was going to hit the free agent market, I was excited. I was all about it. I tweeted out that, hey, Kenny Golladay, I don't care if he's a contested catch guy. He's not just that. And I'll admit, I ended up deleting that tweet because I started thinking more and more about it. Like, I kind of would rather somebody else pay him, given the skill set that he brings that's so similar to Mike Gesicki and Devontae Parker, that contested catch, big body type of receiver.
Yeah, and for me, the one thing I like about Golladay being available, as much as I do like Golladay, is he's unquestionably the top wide receiver in the free agency class, which potentially could drive down the Samuel price just a little bit, and maybe it puts him in striking range. It's Samuel's the guy I liked overall anyway as a fit for the Dolphins. So maybe. I still think he's going to be out of the price range I'd like to see, but it might drive Samuel down to the point that we're able to take a stab.
Yeah, that'll be worth monitoring because you look at the top, you know, the teams that have basically more cap room than the Dolphins. You've got like teams like the Jets, the Patriots, and the Colts who have major needs at receiver and a lot more money. So it probably won't drive it down, but it's quite possible that it pollutes the market just a little bit more because you look at the other receivers that are out there who are supposed to hit the market. It's supposed to be the deepest class there. So you're going to have Kenny Golladay, Curtis Samuel, Juju Smith-Schuster, Will Fuller, Corey Davis, and then you get into that next tier of guys that you – one guy you like, Marvin Jones, Nelson Aguilar, Rashad Perryman, T.Y. Hilton, A.J. Green, that type of group there. So, yeah, and then also, too, you factor in that Emmanuel Sanders and John Brown were cut this past week, too. So there's a lot of options out there for the Dolphins, and I do think you're right. Even though Curtis Samuel is far and away the number one big fish I want to land – I don't see the Dolphins going that route, and that seems to be the talk right now.
Yeah, I really hope they go Marvin Jones. I mean, or T.Y. Hilton. The one thing I like with Marvin Jones, and this is something we haven't really spent some time on with him, is he's pretty much made no secret since the end of the season that he'd like to come play in Miami. He's been as thinly veiled as you can possibly be, but. You know, he seems to want to come play with Tua, and he may take a mild discount for that fact. Who knows? I mean, it's you see those scenarios all the time where these guys take less money to come somewhere that they feel like they can win and play with the guys they want to play with. So that would be very interesting, and I have no idea what the relationship is between Galladay and Jones, but if he's able to talk Galladay into, like, hey, why don't the two of us take a little less money, go down there and win some stuff and make better money later, which Marvin Jones may not be in position for, but Galladay would. Who knows? I mean, it's there's a lot of things. But honestly, for me, it's not the wide receiver position I'm focused on squarely as far as the star player goes. It's still the center position in Corey Linsley.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in just a second here. At wide receiver, what I could see is, you know, I imagine Galladay, Samuel, Smith-Schuster, Corey Davis, Will Fuller, those five. I see them in the first couple of days of free agency getting signed. Then after that gets watered down a little bit, if the Dolphins choose not to spend a lot of money at that position, then you start. If we get to, say, Thursday or Friday, Marvin Jones is still out there, and he wants to play for a little bit less, and it's clear that, hey, I'm not going to get $8 million a year, but I might get $5 million a year, then I think that's a little bit more in the Dolphins' price range. Maybe you get a good number two type option at wide receiver here for a couple of years, even though he is 31. So that bears watching, and I think the same kind of goes for T.Y. Hilton too.
Yeah, and if for some reason Brian Flores and Chris Greer are able to sign Marvin Jones for $5 million a year, they should do their announcement press conference literally dressed as burglars running out the door with money bags, because that is such a steal. As I pointed out, he's the only wide receiver in the NFL with 9+ touchdowns each of the last 2 years receiving. And that's a big thing and something that I think could really help Tua out. And for me, too, one of the reasons why I keep mentioning Marvin Jones and T.Y. Hilton is those are the guys that are going to roast people in one-on-one matchups, and if you're going to target Pitts at the top of the draft, they get even better because they're going to be facing one-on-ones more often than not, and they're also going to be forcing some safety help over that opens up Pitts and Gesicki, and you just, you know, it's like you're asking defenses to pick how you're going to beat them.
Right, yeah, it's all about creating the matchups here, and you know, along with T.Y. Hilton and Marvin Jones. And the reason I inevitably think that the Dolphins aren't going to sign them is because if you sign Marvin Jones, he's probably going to be either your top free agent or at least your top two or three free agent. And to have a roster of nobody over 30 and then one of your top free agents is 31, that's something ultimately I don't see happening. But we'll see. I look at that second tier and see guys like that I am interested in, like Keelan Cole, Josh Reynolds, Rashad Perryman, and Damier Bird, who are all in that, you know, 26 to 28 range. That's where I could see the Dolphins looking too. And Rashad Perryman, I think, is extremely underrated right now. I mean, he was a former first-round pick, very toolsy, raw guy coming out of Central Florida. Didn't have a good career with the Ravens, started to pick it up at the end of his career with the Bucks, was signed as a free agent by the Jets. He got hurt, but when he got on the field and we saw him roast Byron Jones in that second matchup against the Dolphins. And I think if you sign him for a decent, you know, salary, $4 or $5 million a year, he could surprise you by breaking some big plays downfield. So he's not somebody I'd completely dismiss.
No, and here's the other thought I have too. It's a lot of people are big on drafting one of those top three wide receivers, and this is something I'm thinking about here as we're talking. One of the reasons why I keep going back to some of those other guys is because if you take a tier one wide receiver in free agency, a Kenny Golladay or a Curtis Samuel, and you've still got Devontae Parker on your roster, right? And you know you've got Mike Gesicki, who's going to play a lot of big slot for you. That top tier wide receiver from the draft is either going to struggle to get on the field or going to put potentially your big free agency signing or Devontae Parker on the bench, in which case you're suddenly setting yourself up to frame one of these guys as a bust in a way that you really shouldn't. And I do worry about that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think people tend to think that, okay, let's just get five number one receivers. That causes problems a lot. And let me tell you this, if you have a second-year quarterback who's not quite there yet, and you've got five receivers or four or five receivers that think they're number one guys, the offensive line isn't blocking all that well, these guys aren't catching a lot of passes, you're going to have problems inside that locker room. There's no doubt about that. So, you know, it might seem like a good problem to have, but it tends to work the opposite way unless you have a clearly refined quarterback like a Patrick Mahomes or like a Josh Allen. So anyway, Paul, moving along here, and I think this here, I've seen a few things mentioned in the chat, and I want to make this very, very clear. I am okay. I would be excited with the Dolphins, you know, going out and getting that big fish, the Curtis Samuel, the Aaron Jones, the Corey Linsley, to not only get a star player at that position, but also to cut down on their needs on draft day. I am also okay with them completely sitting out of free agency so that they put those dollars back in their pocket. They're in a better position to re-sign Mike Gesicki, Jerome Baker, Emmanuel Ogba, re-sign our own and rely on the draft picks. Here's what would piss me off. If you take this money and you come away with James Conner at running back and David Andrews at center, I'm gonna flip my lid. I mean, because you're gonna probably be spending on those two players about $12 million a year, and I can't even say with a straight face that you're addressing the position.
Yeah, no, you the James Conner thing would mystify me the most. I mean, David Andrews, sure, you're getting roughly somebody in the same territory as Karras and whatever, which at this point you might as well lock up Karras while you can and make sure you get your guy than go chasing David Andrews for such a mild upgrade that I'm really not concerned with it. Unless you're targeting Corey Linsley, I think you do resign Ted Karras.
Yeah, let's stick there too, because you mentioned Linsley and you had for a while. He's the guy you really want, and I'd be excited by that too. What I ask is, would you rather re-sign Ted Karras for, let's say, $4 million a year again?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather sign David Andrews for $7 or $8 million? Or would you rather sign Corey Linsley, a first-team All-Pro and arguably the best center in the game, for $10 or $11 million? I mean, I clearly put two of those scenarios above the other. I mean, it's Linsley, and then you probably sit out the rest of free agency. Or you re-sign Ted Karras before free agency starts. You know, you got a decent player. And then well below is David Andrews, like you said, a mild upgrade. And I would even argue, too, in terms of pass protection, I think it's a downgrade from Ted Karras to David Andrews. I mean, that's an easy call for me.
Yeah, no, I the David Andrews thing is a far distant third for me. I still would prefer Linsley at you know, $10 million a year than Karras at, you know, $4 or $5 million a year. I'd even go five for Karras over six for Andrews. Like, as goofy as that sounds, because it's really not this huge upgrade. And again, You want to upgrade. You want to keep your pass protection as high as possible for Tua. Guess what? You want the better pass protecting center. So, yeah, no, David Andrews, I don't have a huge amount of interest in, because it just feels like a layup that you're taking and for no reason. You know, like, it's just, I don't know. I don't like it.
It would strike me as a lot of things. It would strike me as, hey, we're just going to sign the next Patriots center. We had Ted Karras last year. We're going to get Andrews this year. And in 2019, Andrews sat out the year with he had fears that he would have a pulmonary embolism. And, you know, without getting too much into the science, my wife deals with this a lot. And basically, without getting too medical, is if it's an unprovoked pulmonary embolism, it's something that could cause problems in somebody young. And that's, you know, it's not to say that that's going to happen to David Andrews, heaven forbid, but that's something the Dolphins would have to think about, and that would have to be part of the evaluation. He missed all of 2019. He missed, what, 4 or 5 games this past year because of a thumb. And he's going to be 29 years old. So you're probably going to have to seek his replacement in a year or two anyway, especially if he's a center that relies more on athleticism than Ted Karras did.
Yeah, and two things that came out of the chat here real quick, and I like this take from Rome in our chat. It's, you know, David Andrews at this point could also be the media being absolutely lazy and going, well, Flores came from the Patriots. That guy's a Patriot free agent. That's who they're probably going after. You know, and you're not wrong there. Andrews is a good player, but and I'm going to go to something that I also saw from Eric in our chat. For me, Andrews isn't even the third option. Andrews is probably like the fourth or fifth option on my list, because after looking at Lindsley and looking at Karras, I'm squarely looking at the draft. I think I'd rather have, at that point, Quinn Meinerz, Creed Humphrey, Josh Myers. Still not in the same camp on Landon Dickerson, because the injury history terrifies me to the point where I'd probably rather have David Andrews, even though I wouldn't like it, because I know he's probably going to be on the field for 16 games. And we've seen what happens to the offensive line when you have a center that can't be on the field for 16 games. When we had Mike Pouncey, we had a Pro Bowl guy for 8 to 10 games a year. And then we had a big gaping hole in the middle of our line that required you to have a solid quality backup or two at the center position.
Yeah, for me, Landon Dickerson is the best center in the draft if you take out the injuries, but you can't take out the injuries either. And you know, I don't like the idea of drafting somebody, let's say 36th overall, the second round, and saying, okay, he may or may not be ready for training camp, or, you know, from the beginning. And if he comes back, he's shown that he plays with such a physical style, and he's got leg issues that didn't just happen once, but have happened 3 times now. So yeah, I'm with you on that. I would still have Dickerson as my top 3 centers, and somebody I'd consider maybe in the 3rd round. But anyway, so there are some options there at center. I think all of them make more sense than David Andrews. James Conner. I'm okay with the Dolphins saying, hey, look, we feel confident that either at 18 or 36 or with any other draft pick we acquire, we're going to get one of the top running backs in this draft. But if you sign James Conner, you know, you're talking about somebody here who was the lead running back on one of the worst rushing teams at the end of last year. How bad, you ask? In the last 4 games of the season, James Conner had 137 yards rushing, 3.2 yards a carry, when they needed him the most down the stretch. And he doesn't pop in any area. He offers nothing in the passing game. He's not fast, so he's not going to get into the hole quickly, which I think is something that Tua really needs it would make no sense on a multitude of levels. And that's really the name that's being talked about right now. Again, might just be speculation at this point, but James Conner, without question, would be a Olympic level stupid GMing for me.
The only way I see James Conner making sense, kind of, is if the Dolphins are looking to slide him one step forward on that position list as far as where he lines up in the offense. If you want to run a lot of I formation and have a bigger back as your up back or as your fullback, I could see it potentially making sense because he's a fullback that could make some positive plays for you if you're willing to do that. But he's got to be willing to make that move too. And well, I don't see that happening.
Well, and also too, it's not 1985. So
what?
Nobody runs a power eye formation anymore.
Now I have to go listen to Bowling for Soup.
Yeah. Yeah. Connor's not going to do that. I mean, he's not going to agree to that. And it would be a complete waste of money at that point.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, it's I'm stretching here to come up with a situation I could kind of go, all right, fine. But, you know, right. That's the best I can get to.
You tried. I give you credit for that. And I heard in our chat from somebody, I lost the name here, but Jordan Howard 2.0. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, if you go from signing Jordan Howard to $3.5 million a year, and you've got to cut him at the middle of the year because he's a lot worse off than we thought after getting pounded for a few years, and then you go sign James Conner the next offseason for the same amount, you get what you deserve with this signing. So, two players I do not want any part of. I'm very open-minded to what the Dolphins do. I am not with those two players. No David Andrews, no James Conner, please. Moving along, Paul. One other name go ahead.
Yeah, real quick, just for the chat before I lose it, and this is a quick one. How high are you willing to go for Aaron Jones?
Good question. See, one thing to keep in mind is that if I were to – I would prefer not to sign Aaron Jones at all. And here's why I say it. I'm just more open to it than other people are. Because I think you can take a top five running back off the market. You don't have to worry about it in the draft. But if we're talking dollars and cents here, I would tap out easily at $12 million. My preference would be for that to be in that $10 million, $10 million a year range. And that could happen. It could be less than you think, because other than the Jets, you look at all the teams that have more money than the Dolphins have, those top seven teams, only the Jets really need a running back. So I don't see a team that's got $15 million in cap room saying, okay, we're going to outbid the Dolphins and just throw everything into the middle for Aaron Jones. I don't see that happening. So Maybe Jones gets swept up by the Jets for 5 years, $75 million, at which point I wouldn't want any part of them. But if not, I'm struggling to see a team that it would make sense for.
Yeah, and I don't know that you'd see Jones want to go play behind that offensive line in New York or New Jersey or wherever they want to lie and say they're from. For me, not to spend a lot of time on this, I would tap out at $8 million. Which I don't think you're going to get him for, and that's my tap out spot. He's a guy that can command $10 to $12 million a year. If the only way I'm taking Jones is if he calls up and goes, look, I like the way this young offensive line is developing. I like Tua, I like Flores, I like Miami. I'd love to come here. Or he sits on the market for a little bit and you can make that stab at him. And I don't see that happening. I really don't, but it's possible. We have to keep in mind that there's going to be a lot of teams that balk at the idea of a $12 million a year running back, especially in a year where the cap has dropped.
Yeah. So I'll throw another question back to you here, Paul. Would you rather sign, given $8 million your tap-up point, would you rather sign Aaron Jones for $10 million a year or James Conner for $4 million?
Yeah,
I know you don't like either of those scenarios, but if those are your two options,
can I tap out on the question? Like, I mean,
I mean, and that's why I asked, because to me that is an easy choice. It's Jones, because you're spending $4 million. You're spending $4 million to not address the position. And I don't mean to keep beating this.
Wait, is the $4 million? How much is the $4 million guaranteed?
Just about all of it. I mean, because you're probably going to end up signing him to, like, I don't know, 3 years, $12 million. Where really, the first 2 years are largely guaranteed.
That's disgusting. Because I really was trying to find a scenario I could cut him after we draft somebody like that. That's. I'd rather have Savon Ahmed start than James Conner.
I probably would too. I mean, and that's that. Those are the moves I wouldn't like for the Dolphins. It just wouldn't make sense. I'm okay with them being conservative. I'm okay with them trying to land a big fish. I'm not okay with them spending money to not address the position, but think that they are. So, yeah. But another name too, Paul, that does interest me here is Kyle Krabs brought this up in a USA Today. That there have been rumors that the Dolphins could be interested in Denzel Perryman, a linebacker. Now, this would be fascinating for me. I've always liked Denzel Perryman. He's had some injury problems, but I've always said that he is a better version of Raekwon McMillan. He's not going to be on the field a lot in third down, but he's very good in run defense. He's going to get you 400, 500 quality snaps a year. So yeah, I mean, I think I'd be open to that, and I don't think he would cost a heck of a lot of money, maybe $3-4 million a year in that range, because he doesn't play a lot on third down.
Yeah, if he's going to come in as a low dollar free agent, I'd consider it, but I just that type of role is something that, looking at what Miami has in the draft, you could easily address that with you know, a Charles Snowden out of Virginia, or you know, you get Browning in to come in and play that thumper linebacker role, and you re-sign Vince Beagle. You know, like, there's so many options that Miami has that don't require you to spend that money on Perryman that, I don't know, I feel like that's a smokescreen. I think the problem that a lot of these media guys are having is they don't have a clue what Miami wants to do, and Miami has done a very good job of smokescreening the heck out of any move they really want to make the past couple years with Flores and Greer. So
yeah, and good for them. I admire lying to the media. It's to me, it's one of the most important parts of the job. So yeah, I'm with you on that. So yeah, Paul, we've got a little bit of time left here. You know, before we sign off, and it's going to be quite a week here. And be sure to subscribe here and follow us here, because Paul and I are going to be doing shows here this week, probably Monday and Tuesday in the evening, right around 7:45 Central, 8 p.m. Central time, kind of in that area. So be sure to tune in so that we can talk about day one and day two with you all. You know, looking at some of the other stuff here that happened this week. Trey Lance had his pro day, and you know, he missed a lot of throws there. Ball placement was not very good, but man, oh man, do you see the talent with Trey Lance? And I'm not saying this for the Dolphins. Look, I'm out on that. That's not even a conversation I'm willing to have. But if Trevor Lawrence goes first and Zach Wilson goes second, and that's kind of the talk right now, we should be rooting like hell for Trey Lance to strengthen his stock as much as possible, because if he does, there could be a bidding war for that number three pick. Now, I know Trey Lance, North Dakota State, didn't play this past year, not a very raw guy, but you look at the career arc of Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen, how they were very talented, very raw, and then with the right seasoning, they became superstars. I think Trey Lance, that stock is going to get really hot here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, it's Trey Lance is one that I think helps Miami with being able to trade down in a way to still be able to get, you know, Pitts potentially. On top of that, Penei Sewell and whether or not the Jets go quarterback or not could be a potential slide down. And outside of that, I mean, if the Jets go Sewell, you're probably going to have Fields and Lance sitting there with a bunch of guys that want to leap up and get one of the two of them, that fell in love with one of the two of them. So it's very, very possible that we see a lot of scenarios for Miami to slide backwards. And then Tommy in chat, we actually talked a little bit about Zaven Collins. I still like Parsons better, but Collins is tier two. So yeah, for me, I don't know. I want to be able to trade down, and I do think if Lance is able to do that and kick the interviews out of the park and people see the potential there, I don't think Jalen Hurts precludes the Eagles from coming up for a quarterback. But I also think the Eagles could potentially come up to get a tackle, or even a receiver if they're really in love with a receiver. The Eagles are probably the team that I trade the most with when I trade down in mock drafts. It's just they are such a great spot there. And then, you know, it's I'm with you. And Kat, before we sign off, though, and I know we want to stay on this vein, there is one other thing I want to touch on from back in free agency when we get there. Sorry, I just said a whole lot of stuff. And I think you're muted.
Yeah, I am muted. Thank you. So, as far as the quarterback spot's concerned, or Trey Lance and the Eagles, I think Philadelphia would be in an uproar if they traded from 6 to 3 to move up to draft a North Dakota State quarterback after what they just dealt with Carson Wentz. And it's really rare for any team to move up for a non-quarterback with what it's going to take. That's probably why, compared to last week, I would say the Eagles are a little more unlikely. I'm looking at the Panthers as the team that they could say, hey, look, we can go up ahead and give maybe our second rounder this year and a first rounder next year, which is quite a bit, but it would be great for the Dolphins because they can still get a pass catcher. And they can beat the Falcons to the punch. Otherwise, the Falcons could take Trey Lance at 4, sit him behind Matt Ryan for a year or two, who's Matt Ryan's, you know, going to be 36 years old. So a lot of other opportunities for us to talk about trade down partners. I think that's the way that's the direction the Dolphins are going to go in right now, trading down, getting that best pass catcher available. That is the popular opinion, and that's actually one I agree with will probably happen. So anyway, Paul, I'll throw it back to you. What was your closing thought there?
I know you and I talked offline about an exercise I was doing this week, and one of the questions I have for you is if Miami in free agency, and I know this is not going to be the sexy thing that everybody wants, but if they came away from free agency prepared for the draft with Marvin Jones, Corey Linsley, Tyrod Taylor to back up Tua, re-sign Vince Beagle, sign Nick Vigil for depth at linebacker, re-sign Kayvon Frazier, and that's pretty well it other than some deep cut 90-man roster guys. How would you feel about that free agency period?
I would like it because of Linsley. I think I'd like it overall. I mean, if you come away with Curtis Samuel at a decent price or Corey Linsley, mm-hmm. I'm happy. And then from that point, if you're filling holes with guys like Tyrod Taylor, Nick Vigil, Marvin Jones, I think that's good. And I don't think you're spending a reckless amount of money. And then it allows you to go into the draft and say, okay, we've got one or two positions we really need to hit, but we've got the picks to do that. So yeah, I'd be in for that.
All right. Just curiosity. Cause it's for me, this doing something similar to that, and whether it's Jones or T.Y. Hilton or Curtis Samuel or you name it, I'd be surprised if they came away with Linsley and Samuel. And that's where I'm looking at that second tier of receivers. But for me, it sets Miami up so well for the draft that I'd have to go that route.
Yeah, and to answer Tommy in the chat there, the big beastly linebacker that fits the mold is Zaven Collins. He should be available at 18, but who knows given his skill set. The other linebackers we'll talk about in future weeks, the Chaz Surratt and Jabril Cox and Jamin Davis from Kentucky, kind of that coverage linebacker. So I think the Dolphins are going to be very interested in linebacker at the draft, given what's there. So that's going to do it here for our breakdown of free agency on the eve of the free agency tampering period. Be sure to join us on all of our social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and we are also the official channel here of the Fansided Network as well as FinFanatic.com. And if it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the Fin side.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.